And Odermin Abayit. So on the top of Nun Vav and Aleph, starting the Mishnah. And Odermin Abayit, Mutar Ba'aliyah Divrei Rabbi Meir. So remember, if a person takes a nether to restrict himself in going to the house or houses, then he's mutar to go into the aliyah. Chamim omrim aliyah b'chol abayit. Right, the upstairs is part of the house. No dimin aliyah mutar b'bayit. But when he restricts himself from going upstairs in the attic or the upper part of the house, then he's allowed in the bottom or in the house. And that's divrei akol. Everybody agrees to that point. So man tano. Who's the tano of this limud b'bayit? The rabot. All right, this is, we'll go with the gears that we have so far here. Rabot to the yitziah b'bayit. The rabot et ha'aliyah. Right, so the word bayit comes to include both the yitziah, right, and the the aliyah. So now the Ran over here points out that he thinks that the word is not Yitziah, but rather Tzavua. Alright, so we will, meaning a house that's colored. Okay? A house that is colored. Alright, so Amar of Chista, Rabbi Meir. What, it's Rabbi Meir, why? Di Rabbanan, Amri Rabbanan, Aliyah, Bichlal HaBayit. That the upstairs is included within the term Bayit. Lamli Likra, Babayit, right? The Ribuya. Why would you need to include the attic or the upstairs from the extra lashon of babayit if you already would have known it from the term bayit? I mean, the definition of the term bayit is both house and aliyah. So why do you need the additional term of babayit to rabot et ha-aliyah? Right, to include the aliyah. So it must be that Rabbi Meir is the author of this statement. So here we're talking about, Nigayim, and what house that is affected by Nigayim. And that's why the Ran, when he changes the word from Yitziah, which would be a type of house, type of building, he changes it to read Shabua, or because of color. Why is that relevant? Because we know Nigay Begadim, right? Nigayim by clothing, colored Begadim don't have Tumas. Right, Negoyim. So we would have thought there's a hekesh throughout the parshios of Negoyim that which applies to Negei Batim would apply to Negei Bikadim and vice versa. So if there is no Negei Bikadim by colored clothing, maybe they would think the same by colored houses. And the answer is no, that even colored houses are included in Negoyim, that a colored house could get a Nega.
Is the understanding being that if a house is colored, it's not considered a beged, a house in a Torah, a beged lechter, a beged
right,
Torah.
Exactly. Right, right. That's exactly. So that's the way the Ran learns. He brings down from one of the Rav Moshe Bar Shneur. So that's he quotes as saying that the Girsa should read Tavua and not Yitziah. Okay. So now Amar Bayamar Apilu Tem Rabbanan. Even Rabbanan could be the author of this limud. Why? Cross Sakadatka by Krum. So I feel Tim Rama by Krum, they need the pasuk. The Sakadatka, I mean, we would have thought, Beveit Eretz Achuzatchem, where can Goyim only apply on Beveit Eretz Achuzatchem? The Mechubar Ba'ara Shmei Bayit. That which is attached to the ground is considered a house. Right? Whereas, Aliyah, Halo Mechabar Ba'ara. The upper half of the house is not attached to the ground. Right? It's on top of the other house, and therefore it may not be, right, therefore it may not be considered faith iret akuzat then. Can you imagine? it wouldn't be considered faith akuzat then, and therefore it would not be mikabel tuma. Therefore they have the limud of the bayit. So therefore, even though normally the chachamim believe that the word bayit would be inclusive of aliyah, but here, maybe it's not, because of the unique requirement that the bayit, by Beit Nigayim, is Beit Eretz Achuzatchem, that it be Mechubar Lekarka. Because of that unique requirement, maybe Aliyah would have been, or you would have thought Aliyah was excluded, so therefore you need a pasuk to teach you, Babayit, even the Aliyah. So I can work even according to the Chachamim. Now the Gemara says, "Kaman Azla." Who does this go like? Bayit bebeiti. If he says a house in my house, ani mocher lecha. I sold. I'm selling it, and the guy buys it. From a house in my house, you buy. So Mar Eil, what can he show him? So he says you can show him an aliyah. Why? Time of Amar Lai Bayit Shebeiti, a house within my house, ani mocher lecha. Of a bayit stam, ain't no Mariel Aliyah. But he simply said, "I'm selling you a house." Then it would not be appropriate to show him the upstairs house. Right? So you can't. An Aliyah would not be considered a bayit. Only when he says a house within my house can he suggest that the Aliyah is what he sold him. So that sounds like Rabbi Meir, right? Because he's saying that the term bayit itself does not mean bayit the Aliyah. It just means bayit. And you have to have this unusual language of bayit the. Bayit Bibeti, right, is the one that allows you to claim that he sold him Aliyah. So that's what it says, Lema Rabbi Meir. Let's say that it is Rabbi Meir. So where it says, Afilu Tema Rabbanon, it could even be the Rabbanon, my Aliyah, what is the Aliyah? Mi'ule Shibabatim. Right, Aliyah means the best of the houses. So we can interpret the word bayit bebeiti, right, to mean not literally a house within my house, meaning the aliyah, but what? That it means the mi'uleh shebebatim, the best of the houses, which means what? He has to pick him the, when I say to you, the house of my house means that that's the best, the choicest of my houses. Not that it means that a house was in my house, but the choicest of my houses. We can interpret the language that way. Since we can interpret it that way, that's the way the Rabbanan say here, that he can show him Mar'ehu Aliyah. You can still show him an Aliyah. It's a look in Rashi. Me'ulash ibn Echasav. Habayit hamishubach shebebatav, the nicest house among his houses. Strike the ten lawyers to give him. Heket amar bayit bebeiti. When he says bayit bebeiti, about iav amar bayit stam, ayachal lo aliyah mamash, the aliyah bekwal bayit. Then he could have showed him a real bayit. All right. So when we say here, when he says the Rav Huna says bayit bebeiti, then he's mar'ehu aliyah. Doesn't mean aliyah like we were interpreting till now, a upper house, but aliyah means the best. So that's the interpretation of bayit bebeiti, but you cannot infer from that, had you simply said bayit, that you can't show him a real aliyah, because that's not what we're talking about here. I mean, that there's no, you can't make that inference anymore, because bayit bebeiti means the best, and therefore we can't make any assumptions about what bayit alone would be. And so Rabbanon and Rabbi Meir could both be the authors of this statement. I mean, I just mentioned it, I'm going to look it inside, but Ron points out that this sugya appears in Menachos also. And the Gemara in Menachos suggests a different answer. The Rabbanan says that shiny okeach the yad bal hashtar al tachtona. Right, by a buyer, the buyer is in has the lower hand. When it comes to a transaction, right, since the mocher is the one who's muksak in the item, the buyer has the lesser claim here to go ahead and make a claim about what he can get. So the mocher can hand him whatever he feels like, and that includes an aliyah. But based on that, right, based on that maskana, then it's clear that the Gemara Menachos is going like Rabbi Meir. Right, because only if you said bayit bebeiti is the hand of lokeach on the lower end of the stick. But if he had simply said bayit, then the buyer would not be entitled to what? Would not be entitled to get or give him an aliyah. And that would sound exactly like Rabbi Meir. So based on that, you would say that the halacha is like, right, of Rabbi Meir. Because if the Gemara Menachos conclusion is like Rabbi Meir, then the halacha was like Rabbi Meir. Then the Ramban, on the other hand, says that even despite that fact, you can say that bayit bebeiti is lo mibayit kamar. Based on our Gemara, Right now, you can learn that when the Gemara in Menachos says "Vay Beveiti," means that you can hand them an aliyah. Right? You could have said, "Oh, well, if a Vay Beveiti can hand them an aliyah, that means a Vay by itself he can't." Rambam says, "No." What you could say is, "Why Vay Beveiti? Even if he says Vay Beveiti, he can hand them an aliyah. Why? Because I could have interpreted Vay Beveiti to mean Meuleh Shebevatim. The fact that we allow you to give the aliyah shows you that even when you say Vay Beveiti, I can still hand them an aliyah." And not just when you say bayit. And based on that, the Ramban, and now the Ran and the Rambam, all passing like the Chachamim here, even though the Gemara in Menachos seems to conclude like Rebbe Meir. Because you can read the Gemara in Menachos like the Rabbanan, you know, if you say it's a lobi bayit kama. And therefore, they say that the halacha is like the Chachamim. Right.
The Gemara implies that the people come to the field, it's basically from what we've seen.
Right. By no derbe, yeah. So that's, I think, there's two possibilities. Here, our Gemara does not ever entertain the possibility that it can be Kederach Lashon HaTorah. Gemara, when it introduced such a possibility of a Machlokas, the Gemara says, Divrei Akol Kuyama is Derach Lashon Bnei Adam. Right, so that's the conclusion of our Gemara earlier on. Yerushalmi actually has an opinion that there is Lashon HaTorah impacts, and the Machlokas stands, the Maskana. So you'll have two opinions. One opinion says it goes Derech Lashon HaTorah, one says it goes Derech Lashon Adam. So therefore, it would be important to understand what Lashon HaTorah is according to that one opinion. That's one possibility. The other possibility, which I think is more likely here, is that when we don't know, when there's a term that's used and it's not well defined by Lashon Bnei Adam, meaning that if people say Vay Beveiti, that's not a normal way of speaking, or it's not clear how we should interpret such a term, then we go to the Torah to see how does the Torah use it, or what is the Torah using. The last thing I'll point out is that over here, the Gemara is not saying that Lashon Bnei Adam is this or that. They're just saying, based on their opinions here, who's the author of those statements in the Torah? It's the opposite way. And we're not saying that Lashon HaTorah is telling us what it should be here. We're just saying that Lashon Bnei Adam works this way. That's what Rebbe Meir said. Then we have interpretations of the Torah. We want to know, what do those words mean in the Torah?
If it's a doubt, you should go to Chumrah, and it just seems to me like from what we were saying before, that the Lashon HaTorah is irrelevant.
Right, but here they're not using the Lashon HaTorah to prove that bayit means bayit ve'aliyah. They have their opinions. And based on their opinions, then the Gemara goes back and says, oh, we have all these limudim by limudei HaTorah. Who's the author of those limudim? So the Gemara always says that it's Rebbe Meir. Your point is, why didn't the Gemara just answer, you know what, the Chachamim say, but Lashon Bnei Adam, Bayit does not mean Aliyah. But maybe in the Torah they believe Bayit means, that, I mean, Bayit does mean Aliyah, Lashon Bnei Adam, but if you go to the Torah, it means Bayit's not, it does not include Aliyah, then they could be the authors of all these memorials. Right, so that might have been a possibility. But the Gemara, it's interesting, the Gemara does not entertain that, which means that they feel a common belief that that's the definition of the word, both the Lashon Bnei Adam and the Lashon Bnei Torah. Here, there's no differentiation. I mean, again, they're not using the Torah to prove what they interpret the word to be. But you have a fair point is, why can't they just answer that the Chachamim, the easiest answer they could say is, Afilu Tamei Rabbanan, right? How come Lashon Bnei Adam, how come Lashon Torah? Right, something to that effect, which is a good question. All right, next Mishnah. Another mina mita mutar b'dargash or dargish divrei Rabbi Meir. I won't interpret what a dargish is because that's the entire Gemara is going to discuss what a dargish is, right? Or a dargash. How do they pronounce it here? What's the dargash? Dargash. Okay, dargash. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Chamim dargash bechlal mita. The subcategory of the word mita, bed. Another mina dargash mutar b'mita. But if you say dargash, then that means dargash. Even of course, chamim divrei akol. That does not include a mita. So the Gemara asks, my dargash, Amar Ula, Ars of the Gadol, the bed of the God. What's the bed of the God? So this you'll have fun with. What is a God? A God is the word mazal. So it's the good luck bed. The bed of mazal. So why do we have a bed of mazal? So if you look in the Rosh, in 2, 4, 6 lines from the bottom in the Rosh. 7 lines. The last word of the line is key. That's where in the line is key. 7 lines from the bottom of the Rosh. You see that? The word key at the end of the line? Yeah, yeah. Okay. See that? Key. Key shot. Yeah?
It's not, it's in our print, it's like 9 lines. 9 lines.
Okay. Ki shara, sara, sorry, sara, the word from the sar, dati ruta, of wealth, right, that's a shirut, nakir shime, his name is nakir, matsui bayit hashomim ato b'nikiyut, it's found in a house that's kept clean. So they always keep a made bed. That's the representation of the cleanliness of the house. So in case things are disheveled or things are out of place, they have one bed that's there that's always made and nice. That will be the invitation for this sar habayit, and there he will always come because he has his, you know, that which he desires, his clean made bed. And therefore you have the Sarabayit, which is for Mazel. All right, so I don't, this is very interesting.
There's a lot of implications.
very interesting Gemara, but that the...
There's a Rebbeway lottery in Israel called Chishgad.
God, oh yeah? So God, yeah, the term God is used as a Mazel. Mazel. All right, so now, the Gemara says, is that true? So, Amrulei Rabbanan Ula. So Rabban said to Ula, who defined Dargash to be this Mazel Tov bed, Hadatznan, we have this Mishnah. Shema Brinoto, when they go to visit him, mean to give him his first meal, right? Sudos Havara. Kolam Asubim Al Aretz. Everybody sits on the ground, and who are they going to visit? They're going to visit the Kohen Gadol, right? When Gadol is Navel, they're going to visit him, so everybody sits on the ground. But who may save Ala Dargash? And he sits on this Dargash. So Mar says, Kulashata Yotilo Yotivala. So all year round, what the bed is a decorative bed. I mean, it's there just for Mazel. Nobody sits on it. Nobody does anything with it. All of a sudden, he's an Avel, and you're going to have him use the bed? It seems, doesn't make any sense. So I don't know how Yoma Yotivala, that day that he's an Avel, he's going to sit on it. So Makis for Ravina. Mita the Haba Basar Viyayin. What about meat and wine? The Kulashata Yibo Yachil Vibo Boyachil. Right? That if he wanted to, he could eat or drink wine. Or if he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to. How Yoma Anan Yehivinlay. On that day, we force him to drink wine. Right? This is prior to the Gzeira. Or the kind of the Gzeira's Chachamim, not to have a Balaam drink wine. So over here, this is for the original takana, which is v'yayin l'mari nefesh. That wine is good for those that are despondent. And those that are despondent, you give them wine to have them forget their sorrows, to lift their spirits. So it was, in that time, it was normal or customary to serve wine in the base avel. They used to serve, wine, alcohol, in order to lessen the impact of the avelus or to, right, to wash away the pain. And as you can imagine, you can see by the smiles here, the results were less than exemplary. And so therefore they were goes there that they stopped giving wine because they were not drinking enough, just enough wine to remove the pain or the sting. They were becoming intoxicated. And then it became inappropriate in the Beis Avel that they were intoxicated. And so the user was not to serve wine, and that's why we don't see wine today in the Beis Avel. Because we associate with Avelus, that one that, you know, wouldn't drink, eat meat, don't drink wine, right? But the truth is that wine is not restricted because of Avelus. Right? Especially with Tisha B'Av, that we don't drink wine is because, to remind us of the Nisuch HaMizbeach, the yain that went on the Mizbeach, and the Basar from the meat that went on the Mizbeach. Right? That's one of the reasons brought. And not because of Avelus, because Avelus would not require necessarily one abstain from wine, actually would require them to drink wine.
Right. There are significance that where the Gemara is defining what a dargash is, that they use as the example either Kohen Gadol or Melech.
Right,
but as opposed to bringing an example of a dargash in use by
a normal person,
a common person.
Right.
Is that...
Oh, the only reason is because of the setup where he sits, meaning that normally everybody would sit, Avel would sit on the ground also. Meaning that the uniqueness of the situation is that because of his stature, or his position, he doesn't sit on the ground.
So if the common person has a dargash and is in his house and he's an avel,
he wouldn't sit on the dergash, he would sit on the floor. So this is just because of their stature, their position, they don't sit on the floor with the rest of the people. They sit at an elevated state, or slightly elevated state. So that's so dergash, I mean today that we sit on chairs is only because it's within shlosh tefachim of the ground, so that it's considered as if one's sitting on the ground itself. So the dergash here, so the point that Ravina's making is that you see that even in Avelus, you have unique institutions, which we say that even though all year you don't have to drink wine, by Avelus you have to drink wine. So it's over here, even though all year you don't sit on a dergash, nevertheless, by Avelus you would sit on a dergash. That's an answer, correct. Or it's refuting the challenge of the coming to Ula's existence. Right, oh, right, yeah, that it's not... he's challenging the Rabbanan's their understanding of dargash, and therefore it reestablishes Ula's position, which was the original position, that dargash is this mazel tov bed. So now the Gemara says, well, this is the real question. Titania, dargash, lo yakofehu, elozokfo. You're not, there's a requirement by Avelus to be kfiya samita, to flip over the bed, right? Ella, the dargash, you don't flip over the bed, but you stand it up. You don't actually flip it over, but you stand it up. V'amart, arsa de gadol, right? If you say that it's a mazel tov bed, why should you not flip it over? V'atanya, hakofed mitato, one who flips over his bed when is an avel, lo mitato bilvad hu kofed, el kol mitov sheesh lo batok habayit. He doesn't just flip over his bed, but any bed that's found in this house. Right, so if that's the case, then the dargash should be included in the requirement of kriyat hamita. Why does he simply stand on the bed and not flip it over? So when it says halokasha, which actually that's more along the normal lines of how you respond, right? Halokasha, that's not a question. Right, mita dahava, because it's similar to amita miyuchedet lekelim, a bed that is used for storage, right? Meaning that you have a bed in the house that's not often used, and people stack, you know, pile clothing on top of it. That it's not a bed that's not in usage for sleeping on, but rather as a storage point. If that's the case, right, by amitam yuchad of the kelim, you don't have to do kfiat hamita. So the same thing will be with this dargash. Since this dargash is not unique, or not used, its usage is not for sleeping on, but rather for mazel, then it will not be under the requirement of kfiat hamita, because kfiat hamita is only for beds that are slept on. The Tanya. If a bed that's not in usage for sleeping on, but rather for storage or placing items on, and you don't have to flip it over. Right? So that's just an aside. Today is one of the minagei avilut that we are not knowing in, which is kfiat hamita. It's not necessarily relevant to the way our beds work. I mean, to flip over our beds would be, right, not so meaningful in the sense of what they were flipping over the bed because of the structure of the bed, and that made it that flipping over the bed was a siman that you don't sleep on something comfortable and you don't sleep on it. Right? Our minhag is either to make it slightly uncomfortable or sleep on the floor. Although I don't think most people sleep on the floor today. Tosus and Tanis mentions that we're not knowing that kfiyas hamita hayom. We're not knowing that minhag.
Who said that covering the mirrors was
equivalent
exchange.
Okay, so therefore the covering of the mirrors would replace that. Is that what you suggested? Right, thank you. I hadn't heard that before. Alright. So now, Ella, Ikasha, Hakasha. We got another question for you. The Tanya, Rav Shimon Golomer, Dagash, Matir, Karvitav, or Karvitiyov, Vahu, Nofel Me'elav, and it falls apart by itself. What does it have these karvitin? Right. So what is these? What are these karvitin here? Right. So first of all, it's good because it's this week's parsha. Right. So if you look at Rashi, what are karvitin? It says luvaot shibo. Right. So where do we have that in this week's parsha? We have in what? The Mishkan, right, by the Yiriot. Right, you have it says that you have to be Mechaber, right, depending on which one, you have to have five Yiriot. I mean, this is on the Truma, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have went to the top, but it was last week's question. Right, they joined them together in the middle, and how did they join them together? Lulaot. They had these loops, right, and then they had Kasav that held them, they had pins that held the two, together the two loops together.
And there's also the popular cereal Lula Oat Parent.
So the
sorry.
So Kiryatav Huno Felmelav. So that's the assumption here. The question is why did Gemara feel this way? But the suggestion here is that a Kiryatav would be how do you release the beds? So their beds, and this is important. This is part of their beds were a wooden frame. Okay, and then you had to have something inside the wooden frame that actually held up, the equivalent of our, box spring or mattress, right? That's in the middle that supports the person who's laying on top of it. So that item, that support, that mattress or box spring that's in the middle, has to somehow be attached to the frame. It's the suggestion of the Gemara is here that when this bracelet that says Dargash, Matir Karbitav, means that say it was a leather, piece of leather in the middle that the person slept on. How is it attached to the bed frame? Through lulaot, they had loops. Right? These loops were either the loops were on the skin, like the leather itself, and then you hook these loops onto the bed frame, and that's how you kept it up. Right? Or the other way around, you could have it possibly be that the loops are on the bed frame, right? And then you tie the leather piece onto those loops that are on the bed frame. And so either way, those karbitav, right, what does he suggest? He says if you release the karbitav, meaning if you release the rope that attaches the loops to the bed frame, depending on either side, whether the loops are on the bed frame or on the leather, and they're attached to a rope. If you just pull that rope out, by definition, what's going to fall out, the mattress or the box spring is going to fall out because it's not attached to the bed frame anymore. So the Gemara says, if Dargash, if you release the Karbitav, then it falls by itself. The Gemara says, if a Dargash is an Asad HaGad, it's a Mazel Tov bed, then it doesn't have Karbitav. How do they know that? So that's what Rashi says. Hachikim Lehu. They knew that was the common practice, that Mazel Tov beds did not have this form of attachment. They were made like regular beds. They were not made like these loop, we'll call them loop beds. Okay. All right, so now Gemara says...
It's a shame I've seen the Berik of a minute in Mutsah. They had to stand that way permanently, not to be...
To release.
Portable.
To be released, right. Break would mean to take apart. It's to mean that you always have it set, which means that the mattress is always there. There's no reason to release the mattress because there's never any change in this bed status. I mean, that it's always in the same position, the same way. That's why there's no change. So that's his understanding. Rashi says that their dargash would not have this set up. Okay, now the Gemara says, "Be dargash." So the God, the karbitim yisle. Ki at the Rav and Amar Shitotei lahau mirabanan. I asked the Rabbanan, Rav Tachlifa bar Amar Vashmei. His name was Rav Tachlifa. To have a shviach v'shuka detale. He was a regular attendee in the leather shuk, right? In the leather areas of the shuk. Vamali my dargash. So what is an argash? Arsa detale. Alright, so now we get the next definition of what a dargash is. It's an arsa ditzala. Alright, so what does that mean? So the arsa ditzala, Rashi says, shel or, sheyashenala. Fa'ina chashuva kalkach. It's made out of leather, but it's not so important. Fa'haki ho, ve'ina chashuva loya kofer lozokfa v'dayo. And since it's not so important, why don't we do kfiyas amika by dargash? Because it's like the equivalent of a cot versus a bed. Okay? If it was a bed, then you flip it over. But since it's not a bed, rather just a cot, we stand it up and we don't like folding up. The equivalent of folding up a cot versus flipping over the bed. So that would be one. So now this, arsa detzala. Itmar, ezuhu mita, vezu dargash. So how do you differentiate when it's a cot, or how do you differentiate when it's an arsa detzala versus when it is a mita, a bed? Mar says, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Mita misargin ota al gaba, Dargash misargin ota migufo. Right, so the difference is how you attach the bed spring on the mattress to the bed frame. Right, so when it's a mita, when it's a regular bed, how do they rope around the bed frame? They actually have the rope encircle the bed frame itself. meaning that it goes around. You take the leather or the piece that has some sort of hooks or some sort of ability to attach it to the frame, and then you wrap the rope around the bed frame itself. Whereas a dargash, the attachments to the bed frame were not by wrapping it over the frame itself, but actually there were holes drilled in the frame, or punctured through the frame, and you were able to run the rope through those holes in the frame, mikufo, in the frame itself, not around the frame, but in the frame itself. A wooden utensil, when do they receive tuma? So what do you need for a utensil to receive tuma? What do you have to have? You have to have yumira as a kli. You have to finish the kli. Kli has to be in a state or a position that it's finished, and then it becomes a getzashem kli. So what is the finishing off, right, the finishing off of these kelim that would make it a kli to be ready to be makabel tuma? Amitav arisa, so a bed or a basket, we'll call it a bassinet, some sort of a crib. Mi yishufam the or hadak. So mishufam, right? Shifshu, when you have shafam, is to rub them down with the skin of a fish. So what does that mean? It's equivalent to sandpaper. That was their sandpaper. So it's once it's sanded down, because you have a wooden frame, right, either for the crib or for the bed, and if you're going to go lay down on this wooden, with this wooden frame there, what are we afraid? You're going to get splinters, you're going to get caught on the frame. So until the frame is sanded down so that it's smooth enough that a person would sleep there without being afraid of getting splinters or getting caught on the frame, that's when it's considered gemira sakli for a mita and a arisa.
Can you explain why there's a piece of the Pai on this page? Isolation.
According to this, explanation, Rashi said, because hol ba'ena chashuva lo yakofel is
ofo b'yedah.
So it doesn't make it to the holes where... No, but he's saying it has nothing to do with the holes, it has to do with the status of the bed. By the way, we're going to reject this interpretation, so you don't have... Right, but the way Rashi learns right now is that the difference between the two beds is one is a bed and one is a cot, basically. And I don't know why the stringing makes a difference about which one's a bed or which one's a cot. In the end, the Gemara rejects that as the difference between them and says that they're all strung the same way, but the difference is different. But at least at this point in the Gemara, Rashi's view is that a dargash was not a regularly used bed. It was, like a cot that you brought out, maybe temporarily, you need it every once in a while. And since it's not a important or a bed that's chashuv, I mean, it's not used all the time, it was not a necessity to flip it over, but rather just to stand it up would be sufficient. Right, it's the Rashi and Arsit Tzala, you see.
So generally, the cot is not as comfortable as around the bed, and it's temporary.
But I think Jack's asking, which I don't have an answer to, is why is it being strung through the frame, rather over the frame, change the comfort of the bed?
Maybe it changes it from a more permanent type of bed to a more temporary bed.
I assume that's what it does, but I would have thought the opposite, right? Because I would have thought that if you wrap it around the frame, that's more temporary, and if you run it through the frame, that's more permanent, right?
Yeah.
I would have thought it was wrapped through the frame, but you're saying that it's a quick bow through the frame, and therefore you can just undo the bow and then it comes apart. So that would make it more temporary, right?
So the Gemara is not rejecting the differentiation between Mitzvah Miuchedes of Kalim or Mitzvah Miuchedes of something else other than sleeping.
The Gemara doesn't reject that. The Gemara rejects the fact that we have another brisa which says that Dargash Matir Kabilatav. Right, that if you undo the loops, then it falls, and you don't have to be kofet. And the Gemara is asking, well, if it's really a dargash, it's a mitah, then why do we have, if it's a dargash, the gaga? The Gemara challenges. The Gemara says, we have one suggestion for dargash, is this mazel tov bed. So the Gemara starts with one challenge after the next. One, when a kohen gadol and a melech say avel, they sit on this bed. The Gemara says, well, if it's a mazel tov bed, you don't use it all year, now you're going to use it? The Gemara says, yes, we have certain things that are unique to Avelis that happen only during Avelis, like wine, it insists on wine. Next challenge to that is that the Dargash, right, does not, right, so the Dargash does not need to be Kofehu, it only needs to be Zokfo. Right, you don't have to flip it over, you only have to stand it up. The Gemara says, okay, that's okay too, because if the dergash is unique to being a mazel bed, then it's equivalent of a bed shell kelim, which only won't require you to do kfiat ha-mita. But the Gemara brought one more challenge, which is dergash has these karbitim, has these loops on it. And the Gemara says, well, if it's a dergash, it's this mazel beds don't have loops on them. And therefore, that's the rejection. The Gemara has no answer for that, and that's a rejection of that.
The implication is that if it's a mazel bed, then it's identical to a regular bed, it's just designated for a different purpose, and so the structure, the construct of it should not be any different. And since we say the construct is different, then it's not just a bed designated for a different purpose. It's a different type of piece of furniture.
Right, so it's both a different purpose and structured differently.
Right. Well, in the end, that's the so we reject the interpretation of a bed to the mazel. Now the Gemara tries a new one, which is what if it's a arsut tzawah, right? It's a cot. It's called, we use loosely the term cot here. Okay, I don't know if that's exactly what they meant. The difference between a bed and a cot. So now how are you going to go back now and interpret all those challenges we had before? By the Kohen Gadol, the Melech, makes sense. He's using a cot. That's not a, it's just a small area that he can sit down on. It's not a bed that he's laying on, but it's a small cot that he's sitting down in front of the, right, in front of the people on. What about, why does it have to be Zokho and not Kofehu? Because it's not a mita chashuva. It's not a important type of bed. It's not a thrown by the bed. We don't require you to flip it over. We just only require you to stand it up. What about karbitim? Everyone says, yeah, you're right. That is, this type of bed has karbitim, meaning it has loops. That's what you were showing me with the knots in the bed, is that they used to tie it to the bed and then just knot it. And that's the karbitim. So you pull it out and the thing drops, right? It drops off because it's tied through those loops in the actual frame of the bed. That's what, so function and status are different of this dargash tzal.
Right, it has both the benefits.
Right. So therefore it's obvious. Now, the Gemara is now challenging this explanation of the difference between dargash and mita, which is that one has the rope wrapped around the frame, whether one has the rope into the frame itself. So Gemara says, how do you know when is a wooden plea done? Is when you sand it down. It says, why would you have to sand down the mitah if the rope is wrapped around it? I mean, it's one thing if the rope's inside of the frame, then you're going to bump into the frame. You're going to be on top of the frame, and it would make sense to sand it down. But if the rope is wrapped around the frame, then the rope's going to protect you from getting splinters, getting bumping into the frame, and then you shouldn't have to sand down the frame. Although, I would still insist on it.
Or the mattress.
The leather will cover the frame. Right. Although that truthfully is the answer of the Gemara. So I don't know if that's where they are yet in the Gemara. The Gemara in the end is going to say that it's actually whether it covers over the frame or not. So I don't know if the Gemara at this point thinks that it's over the frame.
But there's spaces between the ropes. So.
Right, that's what I would say also. I would want it enough, but maybe they feel like it's enough to raise the level that you won't rub yourself against the wood. All right? If it's roped on top of it, why do you need to sand it? Right? This is the, both of them have their ropes put through the frame of the bed. Ah, what's the difference between them?
Maybe if the reason for the sanding down is not because of fear getting splinters, but because of appearance, then the wrapping around ropes make more of a difference. It's not decorative anyway. Right? It's got ropes wrapped around it, and then it doesn't make it be sanded down.
Okay, that's a possibility. All right, so now the Gemara is going to say. Suggest that hava hava bufan, they're both roped through the frame itself. Mita aule bafuke, right? Bibizine. Dargash aule bafuke bavakta. Alright, so that's the, what's the difference of this? Alright, we'll try this over here. Now the, how it's attached to the side of the bed, but how does it work? So if you suggest that the first one was Aulei Vafuke Bivizayim, right, so the Ran, if you say this, V'nechavim shel arukot, machnis umotzi rosh hachevel, right, that when he goes in and out of the holes in the bed frame, and he wraps it around. Vavakta is that you have Lula Ot, Pulim B'dikve Arukotav, you have these loops that are on the holes of the bed frame, and that's how you tie it in, right? It's on the rope that is on the edge of the bed. So how do you attach it? So they're both attached to the frame itself, but one of them has it done, the way the mitah is done is that the rope runs in and out through these holes, right, and that creates the fastening of the mattress to the bed itself. The other possibility, right, is that rather than having the fastening, what you do is you tie in those holes, or on those holes you attach loops, right, which are always available. And then when you come to put on a bed, the bed comes and you either hook it on or you wrap the rope through those loops. Right, so the question is the rope in through the frame? So this to me makes more sense, as you know, being a difference between a permanent and not permanent. If it's going to be a bed that's permanent, then you run the ropes through the frame itself, and that stays permanent. If it's something where you're going to pull the mattresses on and off, then you have the loops that are always there, that are available to attach the mattress to those loops that are permanently there inside the frame that hang there, and then you clip it onto that, or you rope it into those loops that are always there. And that'll be the difference between mitah and dargash. Now you can understand why, when he says by a dargash, how do you do mitah? You just pull the rope and it drops because there are loops there that hold it up, and you just pull the rope, everything will fall out, right? It'll unwind itself. Rather than if it's a mitah, you pull the loop, then you've really lost the whole frame. You have to re-rope the whole thing through, which doesn't make a lot of sense. You're not going to want to do something that seems much more involved in terms of unwinding it or taking it apart. Alright? So now, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yachin Barach Amar Ravi, Mita Shiniklata Yotim Zokfa V'dayo. Now what about a canopy bed? Right, you have this in other places, in Shash, Sukkah, right, Sukkah, and other places, where you have a Niklitia, which are at the edge of the bed, there are two holes that stand up, one at the head, one at the foot, and then you have a bar that runs between them, and then they have a canopy that hangs over. So obviously you cannot do kfiyat amita. It would be a very difficult kfiyat amita, because when you flip it over, it can't stand up, right? Because these poles are on there and it rock back and forth. So therefore the Gemara says it's simply, or Rabbi Yaakov Bar Akha says it's sufficient to lift such a bed up and leave it up standing up and not flip it over. I'm Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, I'm Rabbi Shimon Levi, Allah Chok Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Allah Chok Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that what dargash, matir kabiotabe. All you have to do is pull the string and it falls down, and you don't have to do fiat mita. Alright? And again, to Josh's point, the reason that that's sufficient is, number one is because it's a cot, it's not as heavily used a bed. Therefore, because it's not a mita chashuva, we don't require a fiat mita. Right, so it's sufficient either to zofa, to stand it up, or to pull the rope out and have the mattress fall through, because it's the equivalent of a fiat mita. It's the equivalent of making it non-functional by pulling out the string and having the bed fall through. Alright, next. Mishnah. Hanoder minayir. One who restricts himself from going into a city. Mutar l'kenes l'tchuma. Now just for those who are looking, the Rans has this Mishnah attached to the Mishnah before, and therefore the Ran's interpretation of this Mishnah is back on the first Talmud, and that what he's doing. But again, it's an interesting study in the Dharma about how whether the Mishnahs were placed in later or not. I think that, but whereas Babli was written with Mishnahs in it already. I heard this from Mayor Lichtenstein, I didn't know this before, but Babli was written with the Gemara that the Mishnah put in because the Babli was interpreting. Yerushalmi never had the Mishnah put in. That was done by the editors or the printers later on. They stuck the Mishnah in. So you find sometimes the Mishnah that they brought in weren't necessarily correspondent to the Gemara that was speaking. They weren't necessarily the same Girsa. Because they were taking what he calls the equivalent of Babylonian Mishnah and sticking them into the Yerushalmi. So there may not be correspondence. It's interesting here in the Dharma, we see a number of times that Rishonim, when the Mishnah are placed in, the Rishonim have their interpretation in different places, meaning that the Ran has it by the original Mishnah. Again, that could just be the printers, or that could be the effect of placing the Mishnahs later and how they were placed. When they placed them in, did they break them up? Did they place them all in at once? Maybe the Ran might have had a different set of Mishnahs that were written into the Gemara. Just a speculation on my part, but we see it a lot. For some reason, you see this a lot here, that either with Rashi or the Ran or other Rishonim, that they have their interpretations of the Mishnahs in different locations, not always where the Mishnah is found in the Gemara. Alright, so another minute here, you can go into the tchum of the city, but you can't go into the ibur of the city. What's the ibur and what's the tchum? Tchum is easy, that's the 2,000 amos around the city. What is the ibur ha'ir? right, so that's right. So that's what I, that's the Ron says, exactly like you. 73 and a third, right? Amot. That is Toch Shivim Amabishi Rayim. The 73 and a little more, 70 and a little more Amot after the year, which is considered part of the city. Meaning that there's a certain amount around the city which is still considered the city, and then Tchum only starts from after that point going up forward. And that's extended. That we spend a lot of time in Erevin on, that that can be extended by outlying buildings and outlying houses that expand the area of the city to expand the Iburah Shel Ir. The Rashi over here says that Iburah Shel Ir is not necessarily the what? The 73 Amot, but rather the parts of the city. The way the in Erevin that we explain the city is that when a city has jagged walls or in or out, then when we encircle the city, we go from a straight line from the furthest point out. The furthest point out, draw the line. So that's what he calls the Iburah Shel Ir, being those extra areas that are included by the sticking in and sticking out of the ear. So the term Iburah, I think, is used like the Ron says, which is, means that extra area that we give the city that's considered part of the city. Alright, about Noder Min Abayit, Asur Min Agif, Vilutnim. And one who takes a nether from going to a house is only restricted from the slam, the door or jam, door jam and inward, okay? Not from the door or jam and outwards. Okay, we go on the Ibura de Mata Kamata Dami. How do we know that the Ibura of the city is like the city itself? And we open the Dhamma crisis by Yeshua, Yeshua Biricho. It says Yeshua is in Yericho. Here they are, they're sieging the city, and Yeshua is at night, he's going around the city and he bumps into the Malach, right? And over there it says that Yeshua is in Yericho. Well, obviously he's not in Yericho. Why? My Yericho. Elam Yericho Mamash is in the city of Yericho. Aktiv Yericho, Sugaret and Mesugaret. It was totally closed off. I mean, it was a walled city. The whole reason they're laying siege to the city is they can't get into the city. Right? El Shraminab Yiburah. That he's in the, right, Ibur of the city. And therefore, he considers me as if he's in Yericho. Someone says, well, if you're going that far, Ema Avil Tchuma. Who says he was in the Ibur? Maybe he was in the Tchum of the city. If he's in the Tchum of the city, that's why he's considered to be in Yericho. Someone says, Aktiv Tchuma. Well, by Tchum, we know it says in the end of Bamidbar, when it comes to the cities by the Levian, it says, Umadotem Michutz La'ir. That you will what? You will count it from outside of the city. Meaning that the Tchum is only, right, Umadotem Michutz La'ir. That's already called Chutz La'ir. That's already called outside of the city. So you can't say that Tchum is part of the city when they poke the whole measurement of the city is premised on the fact that it's outside the city. Right? So therefore, it must be that what is considered in the city, that's only Ibura Shel Ir and not the Tchum of the city. Right? Now, what it says, Yochol Yelech Lebeito, now, I'm sorry, did I skip, I definitely skipped something here. Okay, Meitim, Rav Mari. So here we have, again, we got back to Beit Negayim. Abayit Negayim. So it says by Abayit Negayim, it says that Yetzea Kohen Min Abayit, that the Kohen, what?
Hanodim and Habayis in
Osir. Did I skip, I skipped a whole bunch of stuff here? Oh, you're right. Hanodim and Habayis in Osir Elamin Agafilfim. Abal Min Agafilachuchlo. So outside of the door jam, it's not considered the house. I mean, that if you go inside the Mashkof and you know, inside the door lintel, you see that the door always has a jam that it hits up against, right? So the end of the house would be the part where the door hits that jam. The second half of the door frame will be considered outside the. So now today, if you look at that door, that's a very small frame. But you can imagine, you could have frames that are much larger. And if the door jam, or wherever the door hits the jam in the frame, there would be could be a whole section of the doorway that is not, right, part of the not part of the house. So if you have a covered area where people would enter, like a porch type of a setup, right, you can have that today where the door would slant, have a jam inside that frame, but the rest of the frame there would be considered outside the house, even though it's kind of under the roof or inside that area of the house. So Mari says, well, why is it really true that that's, I mean, Egipel, which is not made of Mari, but it's a Kohen Min Abayit, right, that he'll go out of the house. So this is why Negevit Batim. And the Kohen comes to check out the house, and then he leaves the house, he's going to make it Tameh. So it says there that he leaves the house. So what does it mean? Yachol Yelech LeBeitovi Eskir. You would think he goes back to his house, and then he closes up the door. How does he do that? Either the Shliach, he has someone else do it for him, or he takes a rope with him, ties it to the door, walks home with the rope, and hopes nobody trips on it on the way until he gets his house. And then when he gets his house, he pulls the rope and it closes the door. He needs to be at the doorway. Right? At the doorway means nearby. You would think he has to be under the, right, the lintel. Right, but he has gear, and he'll close the Tamalor, he's not buy it. Actually, it's even a buy it. He has to leave the house. Uh-oh, cool. So he leaves it entirely. Ha-ketzad, omei mitzad ha-mashkof, he stands outside the door frame, right, he has fear, and he closes it. So now, what do you see from this? That if he was standing under the mashkof, he was still under the door frame, the lintel, then he would be considered inside the house. So it must be what? It must be that the only time you're considered outside the house is when you're totally out of the door frame. That goes against what we're saying here, that the door frame can be split in half based on where the jamb is in the door. Or shakuf, if he's under the shakuf, if he's here, and he does this, he's grown, he's scared that it works. Tamalomar, if he's here, tamay, if he come akom. That it works, even though that's not what we want, even though it works. Somebody says, shani gabi bayit, ektiv min habayit, achi yitzayi min habayit kulo. And that there's an extra lashon of min habayit by the Kohen. It doesn't say just yetzah, that it should go out, but it says min habayit, from the house. Because it's going out of the house, it means entirely out of the house. And not simply the way we would interpret lashon min habayit, min habayit means just when you, the house includes everything up until the jam, not that which is outside of the jam. And just for a note, Rashi points out the word shakof means the skopa, and mashkof is mashallah peta. The word skop, the word that you use skop here is the threshold, right? And the mashkof is the lintel. So that's how you can defend to it. When the Gemara here says skop here, it means the lintel, meaning it has to be totally outside of the door frame.